I go ahead. JB leaves the rest of you behind. Keeps as close as he thinks safe. I'm gonna try to talk to them. Seems to me like there's been enough chilling, and they may listen and let us go through. We'll see.
Ryan half turned away, but Christy took him by the arm.
Don't ever do that, lover.
What?
Go someplace you might not come back from and don't at least say bye to me.
He half smiled, took her in his arms, and kissed her very gently on the lips, the tip of his tongue just probing against her teeth. Then he broke from her.
Bye, kid.
Don't call me kid.
I heard that.
Ryan walked away, his rifle over his shoulder. The path cut to the left, and within seconds he was swallowed up by the dark green warmth. He could smell the water before he actually saw it, a soft, earthy smell, sweet with long years of decay. Now the jungle was utterly silent. He stopped for a moment and listened. Not a breath of wind stirred the palm-like leaves of the trees around him. Not an insect buzzed after the rich pollen in the brilliant banks of flowers. Ryan had lived long enough in the Deathlands to be deadly sure that his life could now be measured in seconds. His sixth sense warned him of someone hiding in the undergrowth 20 yards to his right. But he ignored it, carefully not looking in that direction. He continued to walk steadily ahead. Ryan paused when he finally caught a glimpse of the sullen sheen of muddy water. To his left, clear as a breaking twig, was the sound of someone belatedly cocking a cap-and-ball musket. He stepped out into the clearing that overlooked the ruined bridge.
I'm here, Torlson.
Nothing happened. No shots were fired.
Come on, we're all wasting time. We know you and your men are in hiding. We knew it all along. Isn't it better we talk first?
Ryan waited, conscious of sweat trickling down the inside of his collar, running along his spine to the small of his back. Despite the oily brown sheen to it, the water looked tempting. Ryan swallowed hard, licking dry lips.
Nobody else is coming, Yoren Torlson. Not until I say so.
We could shoot you down, and they could do nothing to help you.
The voice came from ahead of him, behind some thick shrubs, decorated with yellow bell-like flowers.
True. And how would you get back to your vill, past five blasters?
This time, there was a long stillness.
This place is filled with dread, Outlander One-Eye. Perhaps you and I should talk.
Face to face. Let's see you, and the others. Unless you're frightened of one man.
The long fronds of leaves trembled and quivered, and out stepped the Baron of Markland. At least 20 of his men surrounded Ryan, each holding a blaster. The Norsemen still wore their ceremonial clothes, which were badly stained with clotted mud, an indication of their haste in leaving their vill, and their desperate speed over the mountain to get ahead of Ryan and his companions. There had been times in Markland when Ryan had regretted that he and his companions didn't have warmer clothes. Now he was relieved to be wearing more comfortable clothing than the sweltering Vikings.
Hail, Outlander!
You willing to let us pass, or will there be more chilling?
You have destroyed all our happiness. You and your friends, the false godling and the black woman of evil.
Yoren's eyes were wide and staring. Ryan realized at that moment that he'd misjudged how this confrontation would go. It hadn't entered his calculations that the Baron had gone mad.
Your vill was doomed.
Lies!
No.
Lies, yes! Nothing was amiss with us.
Eric Stonebiter, who stood at his Carl's side, spoke up.
There was sickness before the coming of these Outlanders, Yoren.
The taller, older Viking swung around, his mouth working, the twin barrels of his scattergun aimed at Eric's midriff.
And you also lie!
It's the water you drink and fish in. Biggest hotspot I ever saw. Rad count off the scale. Move your vill and some of you could still live.
Lies!
Ryan saw the Baron's finger whiten on the trigger of the scattergun and reached into his own pants pocket. Before he could act, one of the older Norsemen on the far side of the clearing stepped forward.
Harold said the water for his ale seemed to be fouled and...
A gout of powder smoke erupted from both of Yoren's shotgun muzzles.
No!
But it was too late. Yoren flicked out the spent cartridges and jammed in another pair before anyone had properly registered the reality of the brutal killing. Anyone but Ryan. Ryan knew that the shouts and the thunder of the 12-gauge would have been enough to bring the other five at the run, and it was obvious that Yoren Torlson wasn't in the mood for further discussion.
Urine! Here! Catch this!
Ryan tossed him a small, heavy, egg-shaped object that had a colored band around one end.
What the...
Jorund, surprised, reached automatically and grabbed it in his right hand, still holding the scattergun in his other. Without another word, Ryan threw himself to the ground, pressed his hands over his ears, and opened his mouth wide. Hardly any of the Vikings moved, though Eric and two of the younger men reacted quickly enough. The Carl blinked, bewildered, and brought the object nearer to his eyes to try to work out what it was. JB had set the fuse on the implode gran, at Ryan's request, to a minimal 5 seconds.
What is this?
Jorund didn't have time to scream. He had barely enough time to die. The implode worked over a small area, but its power became translated into a more conventional explosive force. Several of the nearby Vikings went down, yelping in pain, bleeding immediately and profusely from eyes, ears, noses, and mouths. Ready for the shattering effects, Ryan was up on his feet in a fraction of time, his rifle leveled at his hip. He looked grimly at the horrific side of Yoren's body, some residual nervous reflex keeping it on its feet and staggering toward the river. His skull was bare bone, streaked with smears of blood and gristle, and one hand was also fleshless. The other still gripped the shotgun, its stock splintered and stripped. As Ryan and the surviving Vikings watched, the corpse took a last tottering step and fell into the muddied water. For a moment, the corpse floated there, arms and legs twitching spasmodically. Then there was a flurry in the wide, slow stream, and the water began to boil with a frantic, crimson feeding frenzy. Ryan's fears about swimming in the river were all too graphically justified.
Over here, Ryan!
JB appeared from the fringe of the jungle, his Heckler & Koch rifle at the ready. Jack was on one side of him, Christy on the other. Doc and Mildred stood just behind them. Barely a dozen of the Norsemen were on their feet. Eric seemed to have assumed command of the ragged remainder.
You win, Outlander. We are leaderless and quite beaten.
Looks that way. I swear I'm sorry there's been so much chilling. It wasn't of our choosing. The young man nodded.
I know that, Ryan Carter. When the runes of life are cast, then we are but the creatures of the gods in this matter of life.
Our quarrel's over?
Aye.
So we can pass through?
You know a way to get out from this part of the land?
Yeah.
Take us. Take us who are left, and our women and children, before we all sleep the long darkness from which there is no wakening.
I'm sorry, we can't. Where we go alone.
Mildred stepped to the front of the group.
If you think I'm the Wicked Witch of the West, then forget all this. But I can truly give you good advice. Advice that will save the lives of some of you.
Some?
She smiled at him, a little sadly.
A few weeks earlier, I might have said all of you. Now there's some with bone-deep sickness, carcinomas breeding away like maggots in rotten fish. But there's still time to save some. Move away down the coast, away from the radiation.
Eric smiled at her through his broken teeth.
We must go how far?
50 miles at least, and find some good fresh water.
And some will live?
Yes, son, yes. Some will live. If you're lucky, then most will live.
Then it shall be.
Stonebiter turned to his comrades.
Come, give help to those who are hurt. Let's say farewell and be gone, and meet perhaps some happier day.
Before making their way to the gateway, the companions rested in the redoubt and ate and drank their fill. They took a full day and night to ready themselves for the jump. JB had taken Mildred into the section of the redoubt where the arms and armaments were stored. He encouraged her to pick out a good, workmanlike blaster for herself. She chose a Czech six-shot revolver, the ZKR 551. The ZKR 551 was chambered to take the Smith & Wesson 38 caliber round, and had a solid frame side rod ejector and a shortfall thumb-cocking hammer. Mildred picked it because it had been a leading weapon in small arms shooting competitions, and she liked the balance. And also, as JB pointed out, because the blaster was a serious man-stopper. Even though they'd been away only a few days, there were clear signs of deterioration within the gateway's main control rooms. Several sections of panel lights were out, and one of the big comp tape spools had broken. It was a manifestation of something Ryan had noticed several times. The gateways, with their reliable nuke power units, We're self-sustaining and had been kept ticking over, unused for a century. But when a jump was made, it seemed to trigger a process of disintegration within the delicate machinery. They entered the red-walled chamber.
Is this going to work, Doc?
More or less, my dear doctor.
More or less? Jesus! Didn't any of you guys ever see a movie called The Fly? No? Oh, so forget it. Let's go.
Ryan glanced around the armaglass, six-sided room.
Everyone sitting down and ready? This is gonna make your head spin, Mildred.
I rode Colossus 3 at Magic Mountain, buddy, so this ain't nothing. Shut the door. It's getting too hot in here.
Ryan slammed the door and sat next to Christy, resting his head against the cool glass. He stretched his legs in front of him as the metal discs and floor and ceiling began to glow, and the faint shreds of white mist began to appear around them.
We won again, lover.
Times like this, I'm not sure I can tell the difference between winning and losing anymore.
We're alive, lover. And that means we won.
Yeah. I guess you're right, Christy.
Deathlands North Star Rising is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2006, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Dolores King-Williams, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, David